These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Tuesday afternoon. A lot sunnier today than it was yesterday. Pretty sunny on Wall Street as well. The Dow's currently up 140 points. The NASDAQ up 41. John Najarian is on the phone line. You watch him on CNBC's Halftime Report and follow him at John Najarian on Twitter. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be back with you. First call of the new year.
I guess so, Steve. Yeah. You know, and we have been talking through the years about the almost inevitable demise of Sears. And it just looks like it's here, right? I mean, they were going to have a court hearing earlier this morning. It looks like that's been put off a little bit. But the Sears could soon be gone.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, unfortunately, an iconic brand like that that was just hitting it hard basically until the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, you know, they named the Sears Tower when they put it up in 74, I think, something like that. And now here they are potentially just going to be thrown to the wolves, salvage, I guess, for whatever parts people want. But there's other retailers that are in similar space that are going to have similar problems, I'm afraid.
Well, that's what interests me. So I was reading one analyst, and I'm sorry I don't have the analyst's name in front of me, but they looked at it, and they said now with Sears going, and they look at the malls, that will leave JCPenney, 48% of JCPenney's current store base would now be located in a mall with at least one dark anchor. And that doubles it from it was 25% before, nearly doubles it, which, you know, spells bad news for JCPenney, which is already struggling.
Yeah, and, you know, there are a number of malls that depend so much, of course, on those big anchors. The A malls, more than the Bs, really need that big, you know, whether it's a Macy's, Bloomingdale's, or even a Sears for some of those B malls, to lose it and to basically have them going into this liquidation is pretty dramatic. And like I say, it's a sad day for all of us who were Sears fans.
Yeah, it's, I remember as a kid going there every Saturday. Okay, so on Wall Street today, a lot of green. And from what I read, it's because not that anything good came out of the trade talks with China, but that nothing bad came out of it. So people are hopeful.
Yes, and they're more hopeful because it wasn't just a tweet from the president or an appearance by our mutual friend, Mr. Kudlow.
Uh-huh.
As great as those can be, people are not so much tired of that, but they want to hear from the Chinese. How do they think it's going? And Dow Jones was able to get some good quotes, kudos to them, for how things had been progressing from the Chinese side. And the fact that it wasn't just a U.S.-centric, yeah, we're making progress. Instead, it was from the other side as well, saying we are making progress. That's, I think, as much as anything, why we're seeing the lift.
Hey, I was looking at Mattel, too, early on, and they were up big on news that they were going to make a movie, right? A Barbie movie. That would star Margot Robbie. I thought we talked about this movie thing a year or two ago, but Margot Robbie will star as Barbie, and that's been a big boost for Mattel?
Yeah. The stock did have a 20% short interest. And for your listeners that aren't as familiar, a short interest, of course, folks, is where people bet against the stock, sell it in hopes of buying it back at a cheaper price, much like a buyer hopes to sell it at a higher price. So 20%, which is a fairly large number, of the shares were held by short funds. Those aren't mainly just individuals. Those are usually big funds. And that was with the stock below 10 bucks. As the stock has come up through 10, through 11, and almost to $12 a share now, it's added perhaps 18 or 20% just in the last few sessions. And certainly Margot Robbie would be a big hit for them. She did a great job, I thought, in, what was it, Justice League or something like that? Where she played...
Suicide Squad, I think it was.
Suicide Squad, yeah. That's it. She was part of the Justice League in Suicide Squad. You're right.
I don't think she didn't do very well as Queen Elizabeth.
Harley Quinn.
Yeah. I want to ask you about one more stock and then get your tip. We're running
right,
a little bit behind, but I'm fascinated by what's happening to PG&E out in California,
that
these wildfires might end in their bankruptcy.
Yeah, they were already close a year ago prior to the campfire wildfire that kicked off this year, and they were blamed at that time for a lot of the problem for not putting these lines underground. And they had said they're going to move these lines underground so they're not as susceptible. They did not do it. And now I think it's just a matter of time before they have to seek some sort of protection. And that's why the stock's down from 50. Now today it traded to, I think, $15 and 78 cents. So it's, for utility, that you never see that. That's a huge drop.
Give me some good news. What are you watching today?
All right. As far as good news, we were buying Square, SQ, Jack Dorsey's other company. We were buying it again today. That's a processing play, as well as small loans. They make small loans to businesses as well. And I think it's a fire sale in that stock versus where it was when it was nearly 100. Now it's 62.50. So I think this is one of those that gives you a real opportunity.
John Najarian, great to talk to you on this Tuesday. I appreciate it. Let's do it again next week.
Thank you, sir.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. And now we've got to get Najarian back on the phone line. Now, just as he hung up, we got word from CNBC and elsewhere that the court considering the demise of Sears has given Chairman Eddie Lampert another chance to save the store. So we're just getting word of that, and certainly more of that coming through the afternoon. But Sears limps on, at least for now. Okay, on a phone line is Shannon Vavra. She is a politics and cybersecurity reporter at Axios, one of my favorite websites. Shannon, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so are you going to be sitting at home at 9 o'clock? I don't know where you are, but 8 o'clock here in Chicago, watching President Trump talking about the border crisis and then the Democrats after? Or do you have better things to do?
Well, that's the big question, right? I mean, all of these major news networks have previously debated in the past whether to air these kind of prime time speeches from presidents, right? We know in 2014, President Obama turned to Facebook when there were a lot of networks that skipped that that airing of his immigration speech then. And so we are expecting it to be a deeply political move from the president at this point. We know that in previous years with the tax overhaul, his aides avoided doing an Oval Office speech just because of the political hatch that comes with it. So,
the idea is if you're giving an address to the nation from the Oval Office, it is about the Challenger explosion, or it is about the financial crisis, or it is about a national issue, and it is not a political sort of venue. But the president, we expect him to make this political tonight.
Exactly. And that's the question is we have heard him confirm publicly that he's considering declaring a national emergency over the border wall in the midst of this shutdown. We're now on day 18 of it. And the question is whether he'll use that airtime to address that question about a national emergency there, which, by the way, is not even legally clear if he can even do that.
Well, okay, so let's say if he does that, then he certainly did make news and it would have been worth carrying, right? I mean, because that would set off, that's a definitive action and would certainly set off a firestorm around the country.
For sure. And the other thing is we know that the president is starting to be a little bit boxed in. We've got a deadline coming up with the State of the Union address on January 29th, at least as far as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has invited him. But also in the next couple of days, there's going to be a lot of pressure points that the Republicans can put on over the Democrats, especially as banks are starting to step up now to help federal employees pay loans that they're no longer able to do just because they don't have liquidity because they're not getting paid or they're furloughed. And we know that both of those are really important to the White House right now. A White House official has told Axios that one of the most important questions for the White House at this point is whether food stamps are even going to be able to be accessed.
And so, and you're saying those are pressure points on Democrats, not Republicans.
I think those are pressure points on Republicans as well. I mean, We have both sides digging in on their stances, right? The president's not backing down on his $5.6 billion demand for a border wall. And we've heard Nancy Pelosi say time and time again that she's not going to give any money to the border wall. And I think at some point she joked she would give a dollar. And so both sides have just dug in.
Well, the most recent thing you wrote was about the fact that the networks are going to carry the Democrats' response. I don't really want to talk about that. But Other than to say it's a bad idea. I think responses to addresses are always a bad idea. The Democrats would be better off making someone available to each network for an interview reaction, because if the speech looks bad, the responses look worse. But we'll see how that goes. I want to ask you about something else, and you did write about it. You mentioned that the banks are stepping up, and you can read Shannon's reporting there at Axios.com. But just very quickly, too, you've been writing recently about this quote-unquote Green New Deal, and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez made news on 60 Minutes. Beto O'Rourke is reacting to it. It's the sort of thing where I don't think it would ever become true, but it may well become a big factor in the Democratic primary for president. So tell me what we know about this Green New Deal.
Well, we know that particularly it's getting some traction on the Hill, particularly with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, the new representative, and she's kind of this firearm behind the whole thing. But we also know that they're gaining some traction on the Hill because there is a select committee that will likely address what they're calling the climate crisis. They're kind of amping up some of the language from a previous select committee over climate change to call it a crisis. And the question is whether, if even this passes in the House where the Democrats do have a majority, if it's even going to be got any traction with the Republicans on the Senate side. And we know at this point that it's largely driven by a youth movement called the Sunrise Movement and the Justice Democrats. And we'll just have to see if there's any funding that's even available to stand behind the Green New Deal. But it's really progressive.
It's interesting to me you say the Democrats are calling it now the climate change crisis, because the president's being ridiculed for calling it the border crisis. So I don't know if the terminology is going to serve them well. But we'll see. Shannon Vavra is a writer at Axios. Shannon, great to talk to you. Hope we can do it again.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jenny Salvo. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, forget about the Chicago weather. Let's head to the deserts of Las Vegas and join Mike Apt, who is the co-president of Apt Electronics, and he's checking out the Consumer Electronics Show for us this week. Mike, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Before we go to there, let's talk a little bit about here, because I drive up and down the tri-state, and it's now become like an eclipse of the sun driving by the Apt facility, because it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You guys are expanding?
Yeah, we just bought some land right next to us where the AN building was. So I know we've been causing some traffic jams on the highway, but the big building that we bought has recently got knocked down last week.
And I didn't know that. So you guys are the ones who tore down the building?
Yes. Yeah, there's a big sign that says Apt expanding.
Right. Well, we saw that, and I guess I just didn't put the pieces together that you were responsible for the demolition, too. Well, that's just a sign of a booming business for you guys, so that's great. One of the reasons you're doing so well is because so much is available there, and one of the reasons for that is that you're always checking out new things, and that's why you're in Arizona, or rather Las Vegas in Nevada for this Consumer Electronics Show. And I know it just started today, but what are you seeing so far?
Well, this is my 30th year coming down here.
Wow.
And it is crazy and noisy. It's such a hassle, but they're so neat because you get to see all this great stuff.
Well, do you see stuff, Mike, that really ends up making it to your showroom, or you end up seeing a lot of prototypes that really never make it north?
We see both. As an owner, I get to go behind the scenes with all the manufacturers, and I get to see the things that they're, hoping to come out with, and then also the things they are. So the show itself is a lot of business meetings for me, but we send three guys who just cover the show, put it on our blog, and that's how I see a lot of it.
And what are you seeing this year? Is there anything that's jumping out at you so far?
Well, so far the show is just starting right now, but last night I got to go to the show ahead of time and just visit with Sony, and I saw they have a huge 98-inch TV that's 8K. So right now there's been 4K, which there hasn't been much content, but now they're coming out with this 8K that'll be delivered sometime middle of the year, and it's just an amazing picture, huge, beautiful, and
I was reading about the 8K, and so, but you have to have a giant screen to appreciate that.
Yes, yeah. If it's not like 75 or above, you won't see the difference, because a small TV is always going to have a great picture with 4K.
It's so funny how things have changed. I was on vacation or at a family wedding in San Diego over the weekend. And the TV now in the hotel room, we never turn our TVs on in the hotel, but the TV is so big that it blocks the mirror. It blocked the mirror over the desk. I mean, we now know it's more important, the TV or the mirror. But so and so, but those are expensive, right? Did I read that an 8K TV is like 15 grand?
No, no, it'll be. They're not saying how much it is. It'll be at least 60, probably 100,000. So it's not for everybody. But really, the neat trend is that people are watching their phones and their iPads, and they're really not watching little TVs anymore. So that's why the excitement's all in the big TVs.
Oh, that's kind of interesting, right? So there's. Because I saw in your notes that you talked about big TVs and little TVs. It's the middle ones that then are being squeezed out. I mean, the way I watch TV at home now, preferably, is to sit with my laptop on my lap and watch it. I have no trouble watching my a movie now on my iPhone. I thought I would never do it. I've adapted to it. I enjoy it. And it just shows the way we're changing when it comes to consuming video.
Right, and TVs have really dominated Vegas for a long time, you know, in the electronics show. So I think in the future it won't be that. I think one or more 2 years, and then after that I think it'll be more about these little gadgets and voice activation and, you know, and all the other things that are coming out of here.
You know, I know it's a big Christmas year for the Nest and things like that, the wireless doorbells and things. I mean, wireless certainly is something that's it's coming and it's not going to go away.
Right, and now wireless isn't everything. You know, the cords aren't going to be around, and they've always been nice sales for us retailers, but there won't be cords in the future because wireless is strong. I think our hottest item last year was the AirPod from Bose, and, you know, no cords, and they work perfectly.
So so no cords as in internet connection, but obviously there's still going to be electrical cords. We're plugging them into the wall, I guess.
Yeah, just electric, but there won't be any more, you know, toggles and things that you connect your phone to your headphones, or, you know, that won't be around in
right,
a year
all
or two.
Gone. And as far as smart homes, what are you seeing there?
Smart homes is also everywhere. You know, everyone, everything is smart out here. So
that's not true. Listen, go to the blackjack table. You'll see not everyone is smart out there.
That's true. That's very true. But on the smart side, there's a lot of affordable devices that are smart that can run your house. You know, one of our other hottest items this year was the Google Home Hub, and that, you know, makes your house smart, where you can say turn on something and do stuff. And, you know, these are $100, so
how sophisticated?
Doesn't take much to be smart.
Well, okay, to buy it, but then for the brain part of it, I mean, how sophisticated do you need to be to set that stuff up?
It's really getting easier. As long as you got a Wi-Fi, you know, and you're connected to Wi-Fi, which people have a hard time with also. Once you get that, then you're pretty connected to everything.
All right, so what are you seeing there, or what do you predict that you might be seeing there that will make it to the store up in, you're in Glenview, right, and be a big seller in the next year or so?
Yeah, we're in Glenview. We're seeing, you know, many things. So a lot of the companies are getting more into security, so that's one that we've also gotten into. So there's, you know, Wi-Fi, so wireless security systems, and that's one of the hotter items that's very much growing right now.
Mike Apt is...
There's a lot of...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, there's a lot of toys, a lot of intellectual toys. So we're looking into carrying some of that this year.
I look forward to that. Mike Apt is co-president of Apt Electronics. Enjoy your time down there, and best of luck with the expansion. I'll be watching it from the tri-state. Who am I kidding? I'll be watching it from inside, because I'm sure I'll be there very soon. It was nice to talk to you.
Okay, thanks very much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hey, if you ever had a dream of working for the company that makes Oreos, your dream could be coming true. Mondelez is moving their headquarters downtown from Deerfield.
Hey, Bennett, but where are they moving to?
Fulton Market. Fulton Market! It's always Fulton Market.
Okay.
No, I'm not bitter. But anyway, they're bringing 400 of their headquarter employees to the city, and to be closer to young talent that's downtown already. And that so many other companies are tapping into as well. But where there is life, there is also death. Remember the soccer stadium that was expected to be added to Sterling Bay's Lincoln Yard site? Well, the sports development plan by Tom Ricketts is expected to be denied by Alderman Brian Hopkins. Why? The age-old reason: too big an impact on residents, and more importantly, on traffic. You tell people that they're spending more time in their cars, their minds explode. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
What, yeah.
12:51, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, in the studio is Jordan Engerman. He is the Director of Partnerships at Choose Chicago. Jordan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much.
Bring that microphone a little bit closer to you. And so we're here to talk about Restaurant Week, which is coming up, right?
Correct.
And when I teased it a little bit, I said that this is a downtime for restaurants, and Restaurant Week is one of those opportunities to sort of gin up a little enthusiasm and bring people out.
It absolutely is. It's historically a slow time of year, and we know a time when folks need a little encouragement to get off their couches and out of their houses and to enjoy some of the world's and if not the country's greatest culinary restaurants and cuisines and menus.
Well, that's the sort of thing. I mean, right, this is an opportunity to go over the list, find a restaurant participating and say, I've always wanted to try that one, or experiment a little bit and take something in new.
Exactly. So Chicago Restaurant Week actually takes place January 25th through February 7th. We have almost 400 restaurants participating this year, which is a record.
Is it up 100 from last year?
It's not up 100. We have over 100 restaurants participating for the very first time, which is also a record. So we're really excited about the ongoing support and the interest, not only from consumers and diners, but as well from our restaurant community.
Now, I'm pretty sure when you just gave me the list, the dates there, that it involved 2 weeks, not 1 week.
That is correct. It's 14 days. And really what it is, it's pre-fee menus. It is prefixed menus for brunch, lunch, and dinner. Brunch and lunch are $24 per person, excluding beverage tax and gratuity. And then dinner pricing is $36 and or $48 per person.
And those are increases a little bit, but it's the first time in a long time.
Yeah, slight increase. We haven't raised or changed the prices in 12 years since the inception of Restaurant Week. So it was really more just kind of keeping up with inflation and food costs and things of that nature.
So if you're running one of these restaurants, is it a specific night that you would go there, or could you pick any night of the 2 weeks? How does that work?
It's the normal restaurant hours. So it's just really making reservations by visiting eatitupchicago.com, where you can view all participating restaurants. You can see their menus, and you can actually book online reservations from there. So normal business hours, make reservations, and you will be shown the Restaurant Week menu as well as the regular menu as well.
I was going to say, so the reason for having the fixed price menu is just sort of to set a base that everyone could look at for every other restaurant.
Exactly. It's great deals. It's value pricing. It's exceptional restaurants offering exceptional meals and value for not only their existing customers, but hopefully as an opportunity to entice some new customers to try restaurants that they typically haven't tried in the past.
And the reservations are open. I don't know if I said that, but it's kind of a nice thing just to browse and to go on a little adventure.
Yeah, as I said, all the restaurants can be seen at eatitupchicago.com, almost 400 participating restaurants, not only in the city, but also suburbs. If I fail to mention, we have over 40 restaurants that are participating out in the Chicagoland area. So there's really something for everybody.
And there's a really cool event that kicks it off at the Field Museum.
Correct. The First Bites Bash, which is the official kickoff event for the 12th annual Chicago Restaurant Week, will take place on Thursday, January 24th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Field Museum. Really excited about this new location. It's really a phenomenal, open-to-the-public culinary event where more than 70 chefs and restaurants will be providing tasting portions of what they're going to be serving during Chicago Restaurant Week. Even more exciting, Joe Flam, the executive chef of Chicago's Michelin-starred Spiaggia and Cafe Spiaggia, and winner of Bravo's Top Chef in season 15, is going to be our host chef this year.
So I just read a commercial for Hilton's in the Hilton Dibs program, you know, another effort to bring people into the city to get them out during the winter. At Choose Chicago, I would imagine this is something you work pretty hard at. And how important is it in the overall scheme of things to keep us from settling into the doldrums and watching Netflix?
So it's really important. We do a lot of promotion and marketing of the city during the first quarter. While it is cold, we know there are some exceptional things that visitors and locals can take advantage of. We have awesome museums, incredible theater. We've got Chicago Restaurant Week. We have Chicago Theater Week on the heels of Chicago Restaurant Week. So there is a lot to do here in the city.
I suppose it might also be an opportunity to do things in a less crowded way. Not that things are crowded and everyone stays home, but it probably is a little less crowded if you want to try something new.
That is correct. And events like First Bites Bash, again, one of the key signature culinary events of the year, really brings people out for a unique occasion. There's probably close to 2,000 people attending this event. I have to mention that tickets are available. They're on sale. They're $125 per person. And you can get more information about the First Bites Bash and purchase tickets by visiting firstbitesbash.com.
And 70 restaurants or 70 chefs, you said, right? So
yeah, 70 restaurants and chefs doing samples of...
So for $130, you get 70 samples.
Get a lot of food. And don't forget, there are beer, wine, and spirits available as well.
Jordan Engerman, the Director of Partnerships at Choose Chicago. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.